Morning.
Good morning. How are you, my friend?
Great, as you can hear.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Red alert! All crew members report to battle stations.
Red alert. Shields up.
What shields?
Your Starfleet officers! Now start acting like it!
Oh, it's just Garak. Plain, simple, Garak.
Dax, we might have just discovered the first stable wormhole known to exist.
The wormhole does bring them our way, doesn't it?
Everyone wants a piece of the new frontier.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. And for Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
Quite a motley crew you've assembled here, Benji.
Listen to The Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast. And here are your hosts, Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro.
Bloody hell.
Oh, you found you took over Bill. It's like the symbiote in you now.
Yes, Bill's taken over. He sent his lurgy over the microphone. Now we've all got it.
No, we don't all have it. I don't expect you to send it over the airwaves to me.
Hopefully not.
Are we going to get started? What are we doing?
Yeah.
Let's get it started. Let's get it started in here.
Give me that.
Right. We're ready then.
Are we going to have any pithy names for each other?
I don't know. Do I have any pithy? I was just going to introduce you as Paul and Bill today.
How boring.
This is Bill Dax and Paul Dax, and I am Andy Dax.
See, I was thinking more along the lines of Andy being a southern redneck. I'd like to introduce you to my two co-hosts, his cousin Bill and cousin Paul.
Cousin Bill Dax, because we're all related, get it? Hey, that works.
But nobody else was listening to our conversation, so they won't know what we're on about.
That is very true, which is part of the fun.
It's just for me and you and Bill, is it?
And we can just laugh and go, they have no idea. That's funny. Yeah, you don't know the rest of the story.
It's funny for us.
That's the rest of the story.
You didn't pause enough there. And that's the rest of the story.
You just want to go up behind him and smack him on the back of the head. Spit it out already.
Oh. Or Paul Harvey.
We ready?
Yes.
Okay. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine podcast, a Two True Freaks presentation. I am your host, Andy Dax, and I am joined by my other two symbiote co-hosts, Bill Dax and Paul Dax.
Hello.
Howdy.
Bill Dax is from the planet with a south. Lots of planets have a south.
I'm what they call a southern trail.
Do you want a pickup spaceship?
Yeah, instead of rolling around, well, I love my little Trill mud pit, too, that I hang out in when I'm not in my regular body. You know what I'm saying?
Bill's got a convertible spaceship, and then he opens it up and dies of explosive decompression.
Yeah, we don't have doors. I gotta jump through the window to get into my spaceship.
No one ever explained the inherent problems with that fighter.
Yeah,
kind
of got to stay in the atmosphere. It's kind of boring.
That is my all-time favorite episode of Space 1999. The Alpha gets an atmosphere.
I'm just coming up on that one.
And in that one episode, for no reason whatsoever, Moonbase Alpha, let me say that again, Moonbase Alpha has windows that open. Oh, damn it.
Is this the one where, because, you know, and it says this episode, and they flash through all the scenes in the episode, and it shows one of the guys, the guy that's usually the pilot, and he's playing tennis on the surface of the moon, and I'm like, what?
That's the one, yeah. Alpha gets an atmosphere for an episode. I'm pretty sure going into that episode, you can't work out that it'll go horribly wrong for them, and by the end of the episode, they won't have an atmosphere anymore.
Oh, no. That'll never happen. Everything will work out fine.
They will work out fine, yes. They will magically reappear in the orbit of another Class M planet and everything will be great.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not a species. We're not a species podcast. And we're not a Space 1999 podcast. We are a Deep Space Nine podcast. Or we could be Deep Space 1999. Or Battlestar Deep Space Trek 1999. That'd be a podcast I'd do. That could be quite fun. But we're none of that. Today, we are looking at Facets, the penultimate episode of Season 3 from way back in June 1995. But before we get into covering that particular episode, we always go... No, we don't always go to Blaine at this point, do we? We always ask, what Star Trek news do we have?
I don't think we have any new news. Have you guys heard anything new with the production of the Discovery show?
I haven't heard anything since our last discussion on that.
Wasn't there... did we discuss... We were given a link about... Oh, there's the Deep Space Nine documentary that's going forward.
Very good. Yeah.
Yeah, that's about the same. It's going to be... I believe it's going to be done by Adam Nimoy, if I'm correct.
Yeah, Adam Nimoy's directing it. Ira Stephen Burr is involved quite heavily in it. And they've got all the writing staff and most... of the actors to be involved. The only holdout so far is Avery Brooks.
Yeah, I thought that was odd. But then again, maybe he doesn't want to return to... I don't know. I mean, it looked like every actor had signed back on for it. And I was just, you know, there's... You know that thing where you're like, you know, one of these... there's something missing here. But it should be so obvious that you're overlooking it. And yeah, it's the fact that Avery Brooks was not... Because it showed all their pictures. And I'm just going, there's something missing here. Who's missing? Who's missing? I can't see it.
I'm a little surprised that he wouldn't be interested. I mean, he's done, like, the captain's table and stuff. So it's not like he's trying to distance himself from the role.
Yeah, Ira didn't give a reason. He just said he thinks Avery just wants the work to stand for itself. But he has talked about it before. And he attends conventions and stuff, doesn't he? So, yeah, I thought that was a bit odd. But I think the most interesting one's going to be Terry Farrell. Because the interview I read with Ira Stephen Burr, he said there was stuff going on behind the scenes with her as to why she didn't return that he didn't know. And he was executive producer of the show.
Oh, that could be interesting.
So that may be. So is it being crowdfunded, this?
I think it was, but I believe it made its... I think it did make its goal. I'm not 100% sure. To be honest, I haven't fully been diving into it. It just popped back into my head. Because I think it popped up about 2 weeks ago, and then it was like right after we recorded, and I was like, oh, we can use that for news next time. And then I almost forgot. But I remembered.
Right. Okay, well, I think that's it. That's the only bits of news that we've got.
Maybe Avery Brooks is still being possessed by Joran Dax.
Very possibly. Because he was a little bit creepy when he was Joran Dax.
And you say Avery, you know, he was Benjamin Lecter?
He definitely had some of that going. Hello, but we're getting ahead of ourselves.
Oops. We are very much getting ahead of ourselves.
But, Paul, do you have any space news?
Huh?
Trek news, because I didn't want to interrupt, because I have some news about the Spaceball League.
All right. Yeah.
I know you guys don't follow Spaceball, but I do. If you remember last time, we had said that the Hoarders were being had been barred for a while by the Spaceball League. Well, now the Gorns are showing solidarity with the Hoarders. And they are going on strike until they're only allowed to play day games or have some type of natural lighting at night. So, you know, because we had talked last time about how they get real slow in the night games. And it's really kind of a slow game at all with them playing. Also,
the last I heard, the lights of Zeta were being press-ganged into service to provide overhead lighting.
Hadn't heard that one. That's got to be bad for them. They don't like being trapped.
No, I can't think it ending well.
No. And also the Packlids, in an odd sign, the Packlids are going on strike as well. But they're going on strike for different reasons, because they want to eliminate the application because they feel it's an unfair barrier to them to actually playing because they don't know how to read or write. That's all I have. It's baseball news.
The pack lids are a little misguided in their strike. In their effort to strike, they're doing nothing but playing baseball.
Maybe they'll go to selling concessions.
Their strike is they won't go sit down.
Hot dog.
Maybe they'll sell laxatives.
Peanuts make you go.
They need things to make them go.
Oh, it's so bad.
We'll have a chocolate hot dog. Get your chocolate hot dog made with laxatives. Make you go.
Anyway, should we talk about facets then?
Facets, or as we like to call it, the symbiote that I used to know.
The symbiote that I used to know.
So now you picture Jadzia against the wall, and then...
Go on, carry on!
The rest of them all naked, you know, but turned the other way, you know. All seven of them, all lined up.
You're painting a visual picture here for me, Bill. Keep going.
Oh, when I said Jesse and naked against the wall.
Yes!
Then you have Quark. Oh,
is it worth having to see all of the rest of them in order to see Jadzia and
You would see Kira.
And Leda.
Leda.
And the other female character, Quark.
I don't know. What do you think, Bell?
I think maybe we should get on with the plot.
An ancient ritual.
If you don't mind, I'd like to borrow your bodies for a few hours.
This transference seems to be complete. Brings Dax's memories back to life.
You're asking me to hand my body over to some dead person.
Duran.
The past.
Duran! Stop it! You're hurting him!
And the present.
I want my memories back.
Are about to collide on the next Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Okay, all right. Facets was, as I said, the 25th episode of Season 3 of Deep Space Nine, originally airing on or around June 12th, 1995. It was written by Veni Ekavadia and directed by Cliff Bope. Jadzia Dax finally makes plans to undergo her Zientara, in which she has the chance to actually meet her previous host by temporarily transferring each one's memories from the symbiote to the minds of each of her closest friends. And... Chase Masterson. The Zientara is the trill rite of closure. This is an emotionally intense ceremony which involves the separation of the personalities of the previous host from the symbiote into friends of the current host. The relation allows the current host to gain a renewed sense of his/her shared lives. The process takes place with the assistance of a guardian, who telepathically transfers the personalities. Commander Sisko, Major Kira, Dr. Bashir, Odo, Quark, Chief O'Brien, and Leeta have agreed to participate. Kira accepts Leela Dax, and Jadzia can see that she is the origin of many of Dax's unique characteristics, which she herself now exhibits. O'Brien becomes the shy but friendly Tobin Dax. Leeta receives the personality of Emini Dax, a cheerful and talented gymnast. Quark has been somewhat nervous about taking on the personality of the female Audrid Dax, who tenderly brushes Jadzia's hair as they talk. Bashir is Tarius Dax, an adventurous pilot who died young in a shuttle accident. Sisko has to be restrained in a holding cell to receive the personality of Juran Dax, who is a violent murderer. Indeed, when Jadzia comes to meet him, he tricks her into lowering the force field between them and grabs her, trying to strangle her. After a brief struggle, Sisko regains control of his body. Varad, from Season 2's Invasion Procedures, is not among the previous hosts that are separated out, since Varad stole the Dax symbiote and was not joined long enough to be a true host. Afterward, she expresses some anxiety about the Zientara. She has been a little bit afraid to hear what the previous host had to say. The hardest part is still to come. She has not yet met Curzon. Curzon Dax trained Jadzia when she was a Trill initiate, studying to prepare herself to apply to the Symbiosis Commission to receive the symbiote. Curzon Dax had flunked her from the program, recommended that she was not to be approved for a joining. She later reapplied and was accepted, and actually received Curzon's symbiote when he came to the end of his life. Despite having Dax within her, she does not know Curzon's motivations for refusing to approve her to get a symbiote. Furthermore, she is not sure she wants to hear his reasons. Odo accepts Curzon Dax. When Curzon's memory leave Jadzia and enter Odo, he breaks out in Trill spots and becomes the fun-loving, free-spirited old man. When Jadzia tries to talk to him, he evades her questions. Then he says he intends to stay within Odo and that Odo has agreed to keep him. Jadzia cannot imagine life without the force of Curzon's personality with her, not to mention all of his exciting memories. When Sisko offers to talk to Curzon, who had been his mentor and friend many years ago, Jadzia declines and resolves to face the old man herself. When she demands to hear Curzon's story, he finally admits that he flunked Jadzia from the program because he was in love with her. He realized such feelings were inappropriate.
Creepy!
He realized such feelings were inappropriate, and when she reapplied, he made sure she was accepted. The symbiote she got was Dax. When Jadzia reassures Curzon he will always be with her and a part of her, he is satisfied and leaves Odo's body. Also in this episode, Nog prepares to take the final exam that will allow him to later enter the Starfleet Academy entrance exam. He is despondent when he finds out that he failed, but Rom discovers that Quark rigged the exam so that Nog would fail. Furious, Rom confronts Quark for interfering in Nog's choice to enter Starfleet. Sisko allows Nog to retake his exam, and this time he passes. At Quark's, after Rom proudly presents his son to the crowd, Nog orders a root beer, something they serve at the Academy. The end.
Every now and then I think the time you flunked me out of the program. Now you're creepy. And you're inside the security chief. Oh, that's terrible.
Creepy old Curzon. I quite like this one. It's eminently watchable, largely because of the acting, I think. I had a little bit of a problem with the basic premise, which kind of implies that your memories are what make you entirely who you are. And if Jadzia has all these people inside at all times, she'd be a basket case, wouldn't she?
I don't know if this is a Star Trek official explanation or you can give me a no prize. I think being filtered through the symbiote takes the edge off of that and does it make it all these despondent memories going through your head at one time. Like the symbiote is a way to access them without going nuts, and that maybe some of the traits filter through but don't dominate if you don't really want them to.
Yeah, well, I think that's the problem they had with the whole Trill concept when it was first introduced into the Next Generation, wasn't it? That it very much came across as the symbiote was using the body without really the body's consent. Mm-hmm. And in Deep Space Nine, they went to great efforts to say, no, it's an honor and you've got to apply for it and you've got to be the right kind of person and it's mutually beneficial in a symbiotic relationship. But I don't necessarily believe that your memories are what completely makes you what you are. But the fact that all the personalities are still in there as well, that's surely got to be very difficult to live with. Because even the symbiote having that many personalities, that'd be very difficult for anything.
I've seen
to have to deal with that many disparate, and they're all very different people, which is where the acting comes from. Renaud Bourgeois is absolutely brilliant as Curzon, who does come across as a bit creepy, but you always thought Curzon was a bit creepy. And I like that Sisko does a great deal of explaining that, yeah, Curzon was my friend, but he could be a pain in the arse. And Kira really gets one scene as her symbiote, but obviously Nana Visitor knocks it out of the park because she plays Spaceball.
I thought Curzon kind of came across as like a borscht belt comedian.
So what are we going to... So if he had stayed in Odo, would he have changed his name? Would his name now be Kuzo or Odon? Something like that?
Well, and what did you think about that? That Curzon just tosses out this line that, well, Odo's agreed.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Yeah, well, Odo's agreed. Sure he has. Nah, I'm not buying that.
And because Odo is a symbiote, you know, the connection was different, which they basically came right out and said. Mm. So we don't even know that, you know, we never got a point with Quark, where Quark reasserted himself to speak. We never
right,
got
Odo
a point
didn't
where
do
Odo
that.
Kind of did that and said, oh, no, I want to do this. You know, we never got that.
Yeah, so I didn't believe that either. So there's two kind of parts to the science fiction conceit of this episode that I'm not fully on board with. So at that point, it's the characters and the acting that's winning me. And for a player to them, they pull that off. The Quark stuff with Nog is perfectly in character and believable. Aubergenois particularly is very good. But let's give it up for Avery Brooks. who is really creepy.
I got
when he becomes Joran. Yeah, and apparently that's the second take. They did the dailies for the first take, and they asked him to do it again to tone it down.
Tone it down? Well, you know what? I think it was better toned down, because he was, his voice was very soft and melodic. And I don't know if it's because he, where he was standing in the, I watched that scene twice. Well, three times if you count. I watched the episode twice, and but when I got to that scene, I actually watched it another time. The way the light from, you know how you have that light bar that goes around the holding cell to show where the, you know, where the quote unquote force field is, that it lights up when they're inside. The way his eyes were lit, he had like another like he had another ring of light inside his iris that just looked really creepy looking. And it just you know, the reflection coming off his eyes, and the fact he did, they neither he nor Jadzia in that whole scene, they never blinked during that whole scene, and he's just, you know, staring at her like he just can't take his eyes off her. He doesn't even want to blink one time. He just wants to look at her, and all he wants to do is kill her because she's such a pretty little girl.
And that's all she is.
Yeah, exactly. And that's all you are, you'll ever be.
Now, I had a similar, I think, experience to you, Andy, and probably to you, Bill, but you haven't gone over what you thought of it yet. But I enjoyed the episode, and I really got a kick out of getting to see each of these actors take on the different personalities and how they played with them. But from a storyline point of view, there were things about it that just didn't sit right with me. And part of it is what you said with the multiple personality thing and how they assert themselves. Another part was just the fact that they came up with this out of nowhere, this ritual that they never mentioned before. And if they had done this with each of the hosts, wouldn't they have found Joran before? Wouldn't his personality have asserted itself at some point?
And well, not when been was
hidden from them?
When did Joran? Was Joran? Oh, so Joran. See, I didn't remember when Joran.
Yeah, but wasn't there something?
But wasn't there something they did to hide him, on purpose, or didn't? Because didn't the Guardians know about Joran? So they could have just not allowed, because they were the ones that were allowing the memories to come out, and they could have probably just kept it suppressed. Like I don't 100% remember how he came to the surface to begin with. Was it just a fluke? Did he just like break his way out? I can't remember. Do you guys remember?
Something triggered it. Something like forced those suppressed memories to come out.
I mean, they could have just kept it secret from the, you know, like if he was before Curzon. Well, maybe Curzon knew about it because he was part of the program anyway.
I have six friends to take the personalities. No, just get five. It's okay.
Just five. What? Don't worry about it.
No, I had heard originally the way they. The script was originally written, it was going to be that Jadzia was going to be suppressed and each of the personalities was going to come over and come out and take over for a period. And they decided that, you know, that was kind of, it was a little too Terry Farrell focused and they didn't really have much to do with the rest of the cast. And that's when they decided to go with it the way they did.
What I liked about this, it was a better example. It was a better way for the actors to get to stretch their talent, unlike that god awful episode Fascination.
Well, yeah, I mean this was fun, and each of the characters, I mean, we can kind of go through them one by one. I mean, Kira was kind of cool. Mm-hmm. she was kind of that meek little woman personality, very different from,
she reminded me like a cute little old lady or something.
Yeah. And then we had, who was next? Was O'Brien?
O'Brien was Tobin, and he's like,
Sorry. Please stop saying you're sorry, sorry.
Sorry. He had such a... I saw him as like Jerry Lewis.
And then we had Quark.
Yeah.
Quark was funny. How much longer do I have to do this?
Wait, I think what was good about Quark, though, was that Armin Shimmerman didn't camp it up.
No,
I thought that was a really nice touch, that as an actor, he didn't go to the obvious stereotype of a man playing a woman. And for if you want to see that in Star Trek, go and watch Turnabout Intruder.
Oh, yeah.
So I think I appreciated that Shimmerman made the choice that as far as the symbiote was concerned, he was a woman. And once he was in control of that body, there was nothing different about it. He treated Jadzia as he would if he was playing a normal woman. And it was Quark who had the problem with it. And I think he did both of them masterfully, because Armin Shimmerman does, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Then we had Jadzia.
I think the host wants to say something. Wait.
How long do I have to keep doing this?
Yeah, I thought that was great. We had Jadzia's very close friend, Lita. Who's on her second ever episode?
Yeah, that was supposed to be Keiko, and Rosalind Chu wasn't available for the episode, so they went with Lita.
Well, they had that throwaway line at the beginning. Oh, they've been spending a lot of time together lately.
Yeah, I bought into that total.
You'll see it for the next four seasons when they never speak again.
Yeah, that's the thing. I could have bought it if we knew that going down the line, Jadzia and Lita had a relationship of some kind, which I could see. I could totally see both of those going out for a girls' night out around the Darbo thing.
I need about 2 minutes. I'll be right back.
Well, you go and have that. But they don't know. You're absolutely right. I don't know that Jadzia ever hangs out with Lita ever again.
And her sociology degree.
Yeah.
Oh, she's quite an amateur, so shut up, Julian. You're just sucking up.
Literally.
She was Emily Dax, the cheerful and talented gymnast.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I got from that, I thought they've gone through the cast and said, right, who have we got in the cast who can do gymnastics? Oh, Chase Masterson, she'll do.
She must have done some ballet, too, because she was doing the whole posing and...
Yeah, she could get that leg quite high. So she must have trained as a dancer at some point.
Yeah.
And that was all well and good for the visual, but from a...
Yeah.
From a comedy point of view, it would have been probably better if they had somebody who absolutely couldn't do those things.
if they give that one to Quark.
Or maybe Morn.
Oh, Morn! Yeah, because Jadzia has a relationship with Morn.
Yeah, we should have had Morn in there.
Yeah, Morn doing high kicks. Oh, what a wasted opportunity.
You know, I say I rewound that one scene with Sisko, you know, once, and I saw that one. The Emini scene, I think I watched that about 12, 15 times.
Did you really?
Yeah. Had it on a loop. Lasted about 2 minutes. The loop. Yeah, yeah.
The loop lasted about 2 minutes. Very good.
Yeah. And then you had Bashir was Torias Dax that I kind of got not a little malice, but a kind of like he was like that, you know, his life was cut short, but it was his own adventuresome, I guess, you know, it was his own fault. Well, not his own fault. Because it says he was a young pilot who died in a shuttle accident, but you know how much like he was kind of robbed of his time.
Mm. I thought it was quite impressive that Alexander Siddig's, or is he still Siddig, I feel, at this point, his American accent was truly terrible.
Okay, I thought it was just me. I was like, man, that's a terrible accent.
It is, that's an awful accent.
What?
Normally you find that British actors can pull off accents moderately well, but that was just awful. Now, fair play to him. He does say in the compendium that was a last minute, can you do it with a different accent on the stage? So it's not like he had time to prepare or get a dialect coach or anything. But the guy's on set every day with American actors. I'm surely one of them could have took him to one side and just said, right, you've got to do these lines. We'll run through them phonetically and you just mimic and just do it that way.
Yeah.
But apparently not.
I think doing accents is difficult if you're not, you know, I mean, there's certain British actors and podcast hosts that do the accents well, but...
Well, thank you, sir. Oh, wait, you weren't on about me.
I was talking about Stephen Lacy. Me.
You were on about Chris Franklin's Sean Connery impression, weren't you?
Yeah, no.
It's actually a very, very good impression.
Is it? I'm not sure I've ever heard it.
He did it this week on Batman Nightcast, and I was very, very impressed. Oh, it was like Sean Connery was in my ears.
I will have to listen to that.
I'm coming in your ears, Miss Marty Penny.
Whoa.
And then, like we said, Joran Dax was in the Cisco, who was just creepy.
And very well played by Avery Brooks.
Yeah, in that scene, though, when, they finally have the little battle between the two of them, and then Cisco's
stunt
like,
double! Oh. Stunt double!
But he's like, yeah. All right, old man, I'm back. Did either of you think that might be a fake out?
Yeah, I was like, sure you are.
Yeah.
I would have kept punching.
Yeah, I was exactly the same. I was like, no, I don't believe this for a second.
Yeah, they should have pulled him up and, okay, and have her turn her back and then him, like, change his face, like, and then go to commercial break.
I mean, in hindsight, considering his personality and all, instead of having him in a stasis area, shouldn't they have had him restrained?
Yeah, you'd have thought that there would have been some restraints there, given that before they even transferred him over, they're talking about how dangerous he is.
Yeah, but they said that the host could retain control, and obviously that wasn't quite true, so they figured that was a good enough, they didn't need to physically restrain him. He's behind the force field. Oh, and when he starts grabbing the force field and banging his head against it, man, that was even, he's going to damage, if he can't get to her, he's going to damage this host.
Ugh. Yeah, that was really good. Avery Brooks was fan. I want to see him do that more. I would have liked an entire episode where that guy got away and they had to chase him for the entire episode. I think that would have been a brilliant show where Avery Brooks got to play that guy for 45 minutes.
And then when they catch him, they dope him up, and he's going, "You're all going to die, die." Oh wait, sorry.
Did he turn into Bill Cosby?
No. No, I turned into Pigeon.
I hope he didn't turn into Bill Cosby, because all the women on set would find themselves drugged. Allegedly.
He turned into Piglet, remember? Wolf in the Fold?
Yes. Where is Red Jack?
Red Jack, die, die, die.
Who thought Piglet could be so terrifying, huh?
Yeah, really.
What do you think of the subplot to this one?
It didn't really have any connective tissue to the main plot, but I still thought it was a good story, and it's. I always like when you get to see Rom assert himself.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, it is another one of those A plot B plot things that we've had a couple of times as we've got to the end of this season, where the A and the B plot don't really have anything to do with each other, like the risible darts plot from a couple of episodes back. But this one at least does play into the overall narrative arc of Nog wanting to join Starfleet.
Yeah, this moves the story forward, which the darts one did nothing.
It was funny when because in the opener Nog is actually doing a simulation. Of course, you don't realize this until Chase steps in front of the screen of this. And Nog's going, get out of here. I'm doing a simulation.
It would have been cool if he was doing the Kobayashi Maru.
Yes, that would have been good. But isn't that your final test?
Well...
But maybe you get to kind of play with it your whole time to see if you ever get to beat it.
Well, that may be your final test once you're in the Academy. He's just trying to get in the Academy,
Or it could have even been, that somehow he got an illegal copy of the Holosuite program and he was trying to get a leg up on everything. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's not that they should have done that, it's just that it would have been cool if they did.
It would have been, and how awesome would it have been if he'd done it and he'd have been wearing a Starfleet uniform from the films.
Yeah, that definitely would have been awesome. Now I take it even a step further in my mind and think, he's doing it and then you see he's got, the Holosuite images of the original crew there with him.
I don't think we could have afforded that.
No. They would have had to go with the Trials and Tribulations type, Forrest Gump editing. to do it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they would, you know, I don't think they had the budget for it or the time to really invest in it. But, you know, in my fantasy world, it would just would have been a cool thing.
In Paul's fantasy league.
and this shows the difference between you. That's Paul's fantasy world, and Bill's fantasy world has Jadzia and Chase Masterson naked against the wall.
It's kind of sad that my fantasies involve Nog.
Yours are just more wholesome. That's what it is.
Yeah, loser.
That's right. I'm more wholesome than Bill.
Yes. Hugh Hefner's more wholesome than Bill.
Who was the porn magazine guy who got shot and was in a wheelchair?
Larry Flint.
Larry Flint was more wholesome.
Notice
than
I can
Bill.
Just take that right out. I just popped that right out.
I was gonna say Woody from Cheers.
Yeah, that's
right. Would be correct too.
Right. Okay. Have we exhausted this one then?
We've exhausted the symbiote.
But you have by having him against a wall.
I'm trying to think if there's anything more
about the different symbiote personalities that we've missed.
We had a Morn sighting. Morn was there in the background. Yes. I saw him at least twice.
Yes.
Morn was there. Oh, I don't think we've talked about the Jadzia bit as much as possible. Oh. Other than Bill saying Curzon was a bit creepy.
Yeah, that's what did you? I knew we missed something, and that's an important one.
It is. It's an important part of the story, isn't it? What do you think of the whole Curzon Dax bit?
That's one of the ones I'm kind of going with what you said at the beginning. It was entertaining. I enjoyed watching it, but I don't know that it was really true to the characters so much. I thought it was fun to watch Rene Auberjonois do the dual character and everything and the personality and everything, but I think they spent a little too much time trying to make him seem fun and charismatic and like a little bit wild, and not enough time trying to make him into the person that, you know, would have been as important in this commission and everything as he turned out to be. I think somebody who displayed the personality that he did never was going to get very far.
Yeah, but you know what? If you'd been cooped up for God knows how long inside a symbiote, your memories, and now you're allowed to get out and actually do something and exist again in whatever form it may be, you know, maybe you're not gonna, you know, you're gonna have some fun while you're out.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with the having fun thing, but he just, like I said earlier, he seemed more like a an old-time comedian. He should have been sitting in a chair on the Johnny Carson show, more so than being, you know, a host. I don't know. The character just didn't seem to hit the right notes for me.
Well, he was trying to avoid Jadzia, though.
And
so
the whole
that's
he's
why
in love with her aspect didn't seem right to me. Like, I think as a joint host, she would have had an inkling of that. I don't think he would have been able to keep that memory from her. There's been no indication up to this point that you can, you know, after you die and the new host comes in, you can be selective as to what memories they get.
Mm.
You know, that hasn't been, and it still hasn't been. Even in this episode, they didn't really say that. So how would she not know that he had these feelings? And I'm not saying that she should have felt the feelings. Maybe you don't feel what they feel. But you certainly,
so what, you wanted
you
her to break out
memories.
In, you wanted her to break out singing the Divinals, I love myself, I want you to love
but, you know,
me.
But take it a step further, though. I mean, they do have all the memories, so she should have been aware that he had these feelings, because clearly he had thought about it significantly. Also, they do take on some of the personality traits, because they say with, what's her name, the one that
Leela?
O'Brien had, about how she bites her fingernails like he does. Sorry.
Yeah, and she stands with her hands behind her back like Kira did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, that just seemed a little bit unrealistic that he would have these, you know, deep, deep feelings for her, and she, after she joined, would not be aware of them.
And she also kills vagrants with very large data pads in her off. Oh, wait, no, that would be Andy and Steven on their show. Sorry. Sorry.
Any vagrants on Deep Space Nine? They never had any on Deep Space Nine. They were all on Babylon 5.
Yeah. Bloody vagrants.
Yeah, I kind of think they didn't do as good enough a job of establishing why Curzon was as well respected by Benjamin as he is. he did come across as he's got shore leave for a weekend, he's just going to go out and drink and bed women. And there was no nuance to his character that we could see exactly why he elicited the admiration and the respect of Ben Sisko and Jadzia, because he's certainly the Trill symbiote that we've heard most about. He does come across as like a vaudevillian comedy act, like Paul was saying, and it's an excellent performance from Aubergeon War. I don't think it does the character of Curzon any favours.
No.
Yeah, I would say that's pretty accurate. And then at the end, when she does confront him, I felt like it's okay, time's running out, he's gotta give in.
Yeah.
Like
come on, well, Curzon, time to turn in your space afro. Let's go.
But it's as if you know they you know she went, you know, he said, you know, go away little girl, we're gonna do this, blah blah blah. Hey, no, you can't do that. Oh, all right.
Okay.
You know, it's like, come on.
Oh yeah, when she comes in to Odo's quarters and Curzon's there, he's like, I was just oozing around the quarters. I'm like, ew. Come on.
Yeah, at least have some tissues there.
You know, you have no idea how that feels. I don't want to.
Yeah, so yeah, I think we're all in agreement though.
And that's not to say it wasn't entertaining, because I did think it was entertaining. I enjoyed this episode a lot. I just think there were a couple little plot holes in it and a couple of things done for convenience.
Mm. Well, it sounds like we've exhausted it, though.
Yeah, but I can't believe we almost got through symbiote without discussing that part of it.
Well, you know. All right, should we rate this bugger then?
You're on the clock.
Okay, no. This is solid 3 again. There's nothing wrong with it. It's very entertaining. The actors are clearly having a good time, so we have a good time watching them. The character moments are very well written. It's very well done. Avery Brooks, I think, is MVP with his performance of a really creepy killer. But I have a few problems with the science fiction part of it, and I think some of that comes down to the actual creation of the Trill, which has always been slightly worrisome. I mean, is this a slavery relationship? And they backed away from that very quickly after the initial Next Generation episode. But there's elements of the science fiction part of it that I just didn't buy, and that's the most important part to sell in a science fiction show. And so therefore it's just a solid 3. I'd probably leave certain scenes on if I was doing the Spataro click test. If I came across it and it was the Sisko in jail scene, I'd leave that on. Or I'd leave some of Aubergeon War having some fun on and Nana Visitor's scene and all of that stuff. But it's only interesting in retrospect because it furthers Nog's story. And as we go along, he will be the character, ironically, of this entire piece, this entire episode, who takes something from this episode forward. So it's like Paul said, it's enjoyable. I was never bored watching it, but there's just enough in it to make you go, hmm.
Yeah, I definitely think there's enough to make me go, hmm. I have no argument with that at all. In fact, I think that can almost be the description of the show. But I'm with you at 3.0 on it. I think it was entertaining. I do think I'd stop for a lot of it and watch it. If I was flipping through the channels, I probably would continue to watch it when I saw it. My biggest problem is I do think there are inconsistencies on the science fiction and on the personalities and, you know, how it was all done. So I think they had this idea to do this episode where you got to give all the personalities a shot. Like I said, originally they were going to do it where it was all Jadzia. And they had to find a way to do it. So this is what they came up with. I'm not sure you could do a lot better with it. Unless maybe you could have kind of had it as a running subplot and then eventually done it. It's this way you could add bits of information about it given over the course of several episodes, so that by the time you got to this, you had already laid some groundwork that would have made it just play a little bit more smoothly.
Or it would have been nice if Avery Brooks' character had escaped. That had been the focus of the show, and Curzon was the one who gets through to Ben.
Yeah.
That may have been a more effective ending.
That could have been very good. But they did, you know, they did say she had been avoiding this for a while, and I think that could have been the way you could have had it as a subplot leading up to it. You could have had the, you know, 4 or 5 episodes before this, or even you know, you could have, depending on how long in advance you had come up with it, but you could have had, you know, this keep coming up, and like I said, just giving you little tidbits of what's going to come. So it would have been nice, but I definitely like that idea that the Cisco. Cisco symbiote connection becomes, you know, basically turn it into a manhunt. I think you could have made it a good 2-part episode with that.
Mm.
Well, what do you say, Dr. Bill?
Well, just to continue with your idea of a 2-parter, you know, one way that they actually discover that the symbiote memories, that Joran's memories are still in Cisco, is that Jadzia goes to play a musical piece, and now she has no musical knowledge, and then she realizes, wait a minute, I don't know how to play this piece. I don't have Duran's memories. Oh my god, they're still in Cisco, and then end the episode there. And then going into the next one.
That could have been very cool. I like that. How are we not on the staff for this show?
That's it. DS9 reboot.
When 20 years later we come up with these great ideas.
Hollywood's missing a beat.
As usual.
So I'm going to give this 3 Lita high kicks. Because like Paul, there was certain scenes that I could watch over and over again.
I don't think at your age, 3 is probably all you could manage. Before your heart gets.
What happened? I don't know. His heart gave out. There's this Deep Space Nine episode just on a loop. I don't know what happened. like I said before, that I like this because we get to see the actors do acting, which is nice for them to just stretch their wings and, you know,
and their legs.
Now that we know what we think of this episode, what do you think Blaine would say? Well, I'm going to tell you, Blaine didn't have a lot to say. He said, hi guys. Oh, hey, a Trill episode. Maybe I'll like one of them at some point. I appreciate the chance to show the range of the cast once more, but really, it's the Nog subplot and Rom's demonstration of backbone in the face of Quark that saved this episode for me from a plot standpoint. Blaine. So Blaine was apparently unimpressed with the, well, he does mention kind of in a very brief manner exactly what our review was, the range of the cast. I think clearly I liked it more than Blaine did. I was not, you know, I liked the main plot more than I liked the subplot, even though the subplot has more long-reaching ramifications.
I think I just like Rom standing up for his son, because when you consider where he started from to where he's come to this point, standing up to Quark's a big deal for him. The only other thing that we didn't mention is that they do order a Tranya.
Oh, yes.
Tranya. Cold. Shaken, not stirred.
Nah. Do that again.
I like my Tranya like my women. Cold.
Andy.
It's time to see what's coming up next time on Listen to the Prophets. Oh, yes. Run along, dear. This is Man Talk.
An enemy. I want that changeling found so powerful.
The weapons array is activated. The ship's no longer under our control.
So elusive.
Could look like anything.
So devious.
The Dominion is hoping to start a war.
When the battle is over,
initiate auto-destruct sequence.
The war has just begun.
Don't you see? You've lost.
On the next Star Trek, Deep Space Nine.
Next time, we have the Thing from Another World invading Deep Space Nine's runabout. Oh no, it's the Defiant. I'm sorry, I'm distracted by Lita's high kicking. Oh my. Surely some mistake.
Sounds like if you took Sean Connery and Jimmy Stewart and banged their heads together really hard.
I don't know,
About this thing in Bedford Falls.
Hello, your movie house. All right. Well, that'll be next time. So, for now, we're going
to
say goodbye.
Go fight Dr. Potter.
You made one mistake, Potter. You double crossed me, and you left me alive.
Jimmy Stewart was James Bond.
You expect to talk?
That's a Smith and Wesson, and you've had your sex.
Oh, Mr. Stewart, I expect you to die.
Oh, shit.
Oh, God.
Listen to The Prophets at Deep Space Nine podcast is a Two True Freaks presentation. It is hosted by Andrew Leyland and Paul Spataro. The music and sound clips used in the show are copyright CBS and Paramount Entertainment. If you like to buy stuff from Amazon, and who doesn't, why not drop by the twotruefreaks.com website, where if you click the little link that we have there, it will take you straight through that site, and whilst it won't cost you any extra, we'll put a few shekels in our tip jar, which helps create content like this. We very much hope you enjoyed listening to The Prophets. Every episode is dedicated to the memory of our pal, Sean Engel.
I'm a little behind on my editing chores. That's why I asked you to edit this week's.
This week's?
The one we recorded with Scott.
That's not to go up today, right?
Yeah, that has to go up. You didn't edit it?
No, not for today. Come on, you kidding me? No, I didn't edit it for today.
Oh, Jesus. No, of course it's not for today. We recorded it Thursday.
You had me for a second. I'm like, what?
No, I have one.
Oh, man.
I have one that I did with Hero and Alan that's going to go.
Hero! I need a hero.
One of the weeks when you guys couldn't make it. So even when I can't make it, I'm on the show, though.
Yeah, he tells me and Paul... I mean, he tells Scott and I, oh, you guys need to do this recording. So, of course, he told us this in September. So we finally got around to recording this special Avengers Spotlight or Back to the Bins D-Man episode. And, you know, oh, go on. I can't make it. I can't be there.
You go on without me. It turns into Otis.
Go on. Yeah, go on. You know, he got shot in the leg by Shane. And he still shows up back at the farm. We're about literally 5 minutes into the show proper because I had
And it was
stuff.
Like an hour and a half that you should have been into the show. I was
no, to just, it was like 8:30. 8:30 we started recording, and you're in at 8:35. Hey, what's going on? I'm like, hey, what are you doing here?
This is why I don't work with married couples.
What are you trying to say?
You saying Bill and I are an old married couple?
Yeah. It's quite fun to hear you bicker, though.
Well, okay.
I wasn't 5 minutes late. It was only 5 minutes late. I should have been 8:30. You were there at 8:35. I wasn't there.
Feels like I'm sitting there and you don't call. I don't know what's going on. I don't know where you are.
I texted you and you didn't reply.
Immediately.
Oh, damn.